I don't think I will kiss you. Although you need kissing badly. That's what's wrong with you. You should be kissed and often, and by someone who knows how.
Yes, a smoochy, smoochy, osculating edition of the Body Sphere here on RN. I'm Amanda Smith, bringing you the science and history of kissing. Why do we kiss? Is it instinct? Is it culture? What clues about yourself are you giving and getting when you kiss someone?
Don't talk, just kiss.
Okay, so let's start with physiology, because human lips are special. Cheryl Kirschenbaum is the author of The Science of Kissing, What Our Lips Are Telling Us.
Well, human lips are unique in that they're everted, so they purse outwardly in a way that's different from all the other members of the animal kingdom. And so when we connect through kissing, it means something different, and it affects us differently than in any other species.
Well, we're going to focus here mostly on lip-to-lip kissing, but there are, of course, lots of other kinds of kisses in many ancient texts, from Vedic Sanskrit writings to Homer to the Old Testament. A kiss is a greeting. What information is being exchanged in a way? You know, why have we greeted each other with a kiss going back for who knows how far?
Well, we always hear about this confrontation between nature and nurture. You know, is there instinct behind some behavior, or is it cultural? And kissing is a wonderful example of both nature and nurture complementing each other. So we kiss people for different reasons. We kiss them because it's what we're familiar with, what we see on the street, what we see today in movies and billboards and things. But we also seem to have this instinctive drive to do this. And a kiss can tell us about the health of another person because you're up close and personal, you're getting a sample of their scent, you're getting clues about whether, if it's a romantic kiss, they might be someone you are compatible with. And the odds are pretty good that people have been kissing for as long as humans have been around.
So does kissing, you know, this use of using your lips to gather sensory information about another person, their smell, their feel, their taste, is it understood to derive in any way from breastfeeding?
So we think that kissing probably arose and disappeared all around the world for a variety of reasons. But one of the leading theories about why we do the practice, why it's carried from infancy into adulthood, does indeed deal with breastfeeding. A newborn's first experiences with love and comfort and security involve lip stimulation through nursing, if they're nursed, or even through bottle feeding. We're tilting our head in a similar way that we would tilt our head if we were kissing. In fact, more women more frequently breastfeed to the left, causing us to tilt our head to the right. And when it comes to kissing itself, more of us are actually turning to the right, tilting our head to the right to kiss.
Oh,
and so we do think that might actually be kind of a carryover. We're associating these very positive emotions laid down early in our lives and then carry over into adulthood. So when we want to express ourselves in a similar way or a more romantic way, we give them a kiss.
I hadn't even thought, of course, that you do have to tilt your head before you kiss someone.
Exactly.
Well, another thing about lips is that they are incredibly sensitive, you know, full of nerve endings. What is being stimulated to fire off through the body when two people smooch?
Our lips are packed with sensitive nerve endings. So even a slight brush of the lips can feel very, very good. And it stimulates all of these nerves that go into our brains and then travel throughout our bodies and make us feel very, very good. So when people describe sensations of falling in love, they might say they feel weak in the knees or they feel butterflies in their stomach. Well, there are physiological changes in our bodies causing those sensations. One of them is through dopamine, and dopamine is a brain chemical, a neurotransmitter that is stimulated when we're doing something that feels very good, and it's also associated with novelty. So dopamine is the famous neurotransmitter that everyone talks about when they're describing what it feels like to have an addiction. Well, kissing creates a similar signal, and you can actually become, you know, addicted to the other person, and kissing is a great way to get dopamine going. There's also a rise in oxytocin. Oxytocin is
the love drug.
famously called the love drug, and that makes us feel connected to someone, attached. It's what keeps couples together long after that novelty, that dopamine, has worn off. And kissing is a wonderful way to promote oxytocin in our bodies. And those are just two examples. There's a lot more going on. Epinephrine, serotonin, all of these different chemicals course through our brains and bodies and end up as a cocktail that's causing us to feel like we're on cloud nine when we kiss someone that we're really interested in.
So what's the word on the street?
I do remember my first kiss. It was my first boyfriend, and it was like everything sort of didn't make sense.
It's kind of embarrassing. I don't know. I sort of got butterflies first time.
I don't know. Where I come from, we don't kiss. We don't kiss in the public.
Oh my God, worst kiss was like year 8 lab. When it comes to just eat your face.
Oh, yeah, my first kiss was there.
Worst kiss is when people push too hard on your face.
Like you put teeth on your
teeth. On teeth.
Bad breath.
Yeah.
Cotton mouth.
Just on a school camp. Romantic sort of lying outside in sleeping bags next to a girl like I fancied, and just sort of it was good. It was very nice.
Well, my first kiss was my most memorable kiss, I think. Go back to the 70s. I'm at school camp. I'm the school captain. I'm going steady with the bad boy of the school, Kevin. Anyway, he leans across, plants one on my lips, presses my head into the louvers behind me, and I literally push him off, run outside and go and tell my friends, Kevin Pash me! Kevin Pash me!
Pashed by Kevin. Historically, though, not all cultures kiss with the lips or on the lips.
So the father of, the grandfather of evolutionary biology, Charles Darwin, wrote about kissing as he traveled around and met different cultures and peoples. And many places he went, people weren't kissing, but they were doing these other things. They were nibbling and licking and sucking and touching each other, but to serve a similar purpose, because ultimately it's a way that we connect, and it's reinforced by all these positive chemical exchanges that happen in our bodies that make us feel very good. And again, it's an evolutionarily adaptive behavior, because once it exists in a culture in some form, it's encouraged to persist, because it helps us identify a suitable partner, and it helps us reconnect with loved ones from grandparents to our children.
Yeah, so it's a kind of exchange of sensory information.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Although I will say my favorite story from the literature, because I went back and I read the stories of different European explorers, because kissing was really spread by globalization, whether it was through Roman conquests or through Europeans traveling and bringing the behavior with them. But there's this one example of a young man who went to Africa where he was living among a tribe that had never kissed mouth to mouth. And he describes how he falls in love with the king's daughter. And at some point he gains the courage to give her a kiss, and at that moment she screams and she runs from the hut, and only later he finds out that she thought he was trying to eat her. So yeah. Kissing is certainly not something we've been doing forever in every place.
And like Cheryl Kirschenbaum, for Marcel Danese, kissing is cultural. He's the author of The History of the Kiss. Now, this was a book prompted by a question a student put to him. He's professor of semiotics and anthropology at the University of Toronto.
It was in class, and we were discussing cinema, and this student, she asked the question, why is such an act that is obviously unhygienic and could even be repulsive, how did it acquire such a meaning of romance and of love?
Marcel Danese locates the rise of the romantic kiss in time and place. It has a history.
It does not exist in many parts of the world to this day, even in the age of the internet and the globalization of movies with kisses in them. There are many cultures who have no knowledge of it, and some of them even find it absolutely disgusting and very Western. So that's fairly strong evidence that it's not a universal instinct that we do it like we do some other biological function, that it has come down to us from events, meaningful events, at a specific point in time.
Okay, so when did then the kiss, the smoochy lip kiss, first become the kind of enactment and symbol of love and romance.
Of course, the kiss, the sexual kiss, including the kiss on the lips, is ancient. And of course, kissing as a sign of greeting, as a sign of betrayal, think of Judas, and on has been around. You know, you could find hundreds and hundreds of functions of that act, of using the lips, touching some part of the body of the other. That's been around since the beginning of time, and there is plenty of evidence of it. But if you go and look for sculptures, paintings, poetry that extols the romantic kiss, the kiss that makes people fall in love, that I have chosen you rather than who I was told to marry, that cannot be found until you get to these legends in the medieval period. These, in fact, they were called romans in French, written in a vulgar tongue, vulgar of the people, rather than in Latin or some official language, which means that they were probably spoken at get-togethers. And people became fascinated by this idea of, I love this person, and no matter what our families say, no matter what the society wants me to do, I will love this person, and I will secretly, when nobody sees us, express this by making lip contact. And the kiss, in my view, became their conduit to their own freedom from this tradition of arrangement. So that starts to appear in poetry, in songs.
So what you're talking about really is the development of the courtly love ideal that emerged in France in the 12th century. And scholars from C.S. Lewis in the 1930s have seen that, understood that as an important historical shift, the invention of romantic love as we understand it, really. And yes, every love song, every true love Mills and Boone book, every rom-com has its origins in the courtly love tradition.
It's not just a knight in shining armor who decides to have a tryst outside of marriage, but some of the songs of the troubadours talk about common folk. And from there emerges, in my view, the proto-form of popular culture. People loved to hear these songs, and then painters and sculptors started to represent them and depict them in their own ways.
But are you arguing that before this, people didn't kiss passionately as a kind of courtship ritual, you know, as a gesture of romance?
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes, they did not. Of course there was love from the beginning of time. But this kind of love where boy meets girl or girl meets boy and they bond and they want to stay together, I can't see any evidence before that period that shows, as I said, love being determined by the lovers. I don't see that anywhere in the ancient world at all.
So you're saying that some of those ancient texts, yes, the lip kissing is erotic, but not romantic in the sense that we understand it.
Absolutely.
Why is it, Marcel, that this great romantic gesture, as we understand it, is about two people's lips coming together?
When early medieval period, when a couple would marry in church, they would exchange breath. Their lips would come close, and it was called the osculum pacis, the kiss of peace. But it also symbolically meant our exchange of souls. To this day, we think of the breath as holding our inner self and our soul. They would literally breathe into each other's mouth. That's spiritual. And that tradition was there for centuries. Now, bring the lips a little closer, and the spirituality turns into carnality. And there are many legends that it occurred, as we mentioned before, probably in the tradition of courtly love. That act, if you think about it, a couple of millimeters away, brings the lips together, and touching the lips has always been erogenous and erotic. Now, it's easy to merge from one domain, the spiritual, into the carnal. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that we are more creatures of historical forces than we are of biological, or at the very least, the biology and the history interact to produce this uniqueness that is the human being.
kiss me quick. I just can't stand this waiting. 'Cause your lips are lips I long to know. For that kiss will open heaven's door, and we'll stay there forevermore. So kiss me quick, because I love you so.
Let me tell you an interesting anecdote. When I was very young here in Toronto, I met my wife in 1964, and we would go to these malls, and kissing was not considered very correct to do in public, and we got arrested once in a mall for kissing in public. Can you imagine? Well, no, that's completely changed. I mean, if you see someone kiss today who are young people, you'll say, oh, how sweet, oh, how nice. And I think the movies changed our minds.
Kiss me. Kiss me as if it were the last time.
And more on kissing in the movies later here in the Body Sphere, on air and online at RN. Amanda Smith with you. Now, a kiss can also be a kind of contract of friendship, of alliance. And this is where the idea of sealed with a kiss comes from, according to Cheryl Kirschenbaum, the author of The Science of Kissing.
Well, we are kind of familiar, at least in the US, but I'm guessing in Australia too, of using the X as a sign for kissing, or a kiss.
Yeah, XXX.
So exactly. We think that comes from a practice that began in the Middle Ages when people couldn't always sign a contract because many people couldn't read and write. So they would seal contracts, whether it was a wedding contract or some kind of business contract, with an X for where their name would go. And then they would kiss that spot. And that was considered fine and dandy. And so at this point, that has kind of carried over to a kiss, sealing the deal, sealing a marriage today.
Yes, it's gonna be a cold, lonely summer, but I'll feel the emptiness. I'll send you all my love every day in a letter, sealed with a kiss, sealed with a kiss.
I was at my year 11 formal after party, and it was getting towards the end of the night, and it was pretty messy, and I remember passing this guy and I was thinking, oh, he's sucking really hard on my actual lips. And I was thinking, no, this isn't right. Anyway, the next day I just had these bruises come up on my lips, so I had to wear my shame. It was awful.
Well, I've just been dumped, I shouldn't say that, by my partner, who was a good kisser. He knew how to swirl the tongue. I wouldn't say he was the best, I've had better, but he was good.
Memorable kisses. All right, so can it be a worse kiss rather than a best kiss? Because I do remember one where I'd been thinking about whether I might go there. Anyway, I had a few drinks, was standing there, and I think, yeah, actually, I think I will. Lean in for the kiss, the start, and this pokey little triangular tongue starts darting in and out of my lips, and all of a sudden, nope, all desire killed. There is no way this is going any further.
The best. Kissing is the best. Yeah. All of them are good. How about you?
Now, is there a difference between how and why men kiss compared to how and why women kiss?
Generally speaking, it turns out there is, although of course there are exceptions for both. Social psychologists have done research into the motivation for why people decide they want to kiss someone. And most of this has been done on heterosexual couples. There's been very little research on homosexual couples, although there has been some. But when asked, why do you kiss a partner, or what do you hope to learn about someone from kissing a partner, or any of those questions, women are likely to say, I'm kissing someone to see how he feels about me, to figure out where our relationship is headed, to see if I should stay with this person. Men, on the other hand, overwhelmingly were likely to respond with things like, I'm kissing her, hoping it leads to the exchange of other bodily fluids down the line, or, you know, kissing as a means to an end. It feels good for both genders, but women place a lot more emphasis on the act of kissing itself. And that probably has to do with the fact that women have to be a lot choosier about a sexual partner, because when it comes to reproduction, men have far more opportunities and a lot more time throughout their lives to procreate, whereas women have a few days every month for a limited number of years that they're fertile. So women use kissing and their sense of smell and their sense of taste to figure out who is the right partner for them when it comes to reproduction. We're not consciously thinking about this when we're kissing someone, of course. At least I know I'm not. But kissing is actually a very reliable way to get a sense of whether someone is genetically a well-suited partner.
Lip kissing, particularly French kissing, does involve, you know, being up close and very personal, as you say, and the exchange of bodily fluids, swapping saliva. Another scientist has suggested that kissing is the first sign that you're taking the risk with someone. But how unhygienic is kissing? I mean, in reality, what can you catch?
Well, there's a chapter in my book I call "There Are Such Things as Cooties." Where
that, I think is a U.S. term.
Well, cooties are the things when you're a little kid that you're always afraid if you touch a boy or if you touch a girl, you'll get their cooties.
All right, boys' germs, girls' germs.
I see. I didn't realize that one didn't carry over. Well, there are things that anything that we can transmit, colds to mononucleosis to flu, all of these things can be transferred through a kiss. That's true. But you're actually a lot more likely to be exposed to dangerous and deadly viruses and bacteria through a handshake than a kiss. And that's because if you think about all the things throughout the day that we are touching with our hands, as opposed to the limited number of maybe people or pets or things that we're actually pressing our lips against, it's a fairly safe behavior in the scheme of things.
Well, now, Cheryl, you'll remember, I'm sure, in the film Pretty Woman, there's a big deal made of how prostitutes don't kiss because what they're offering, I guess, is sex without love. In that sense, I suppose a kiss isn't a transaction or a commodity in the way that sex can be?
I would argue that a kiss is the most intimate exchange that two human beings can engage in. When people talk about having sex, it's often very passive, right? It's something they get lost in. They lose themselves. Whereas kissing is very active. We're actively engaging all of our senses in this one behavior to help inform what we do next. And we're right up close, face to face. And so for that reason, kissing feels a lot more intimate. And Pretty Woman really must have done their homework, because there's actually been research on the behaviors of prostitutes throughout the ages, or for as far back as we could go. And many, many prostitutes in cultures all around the world have refrained from kissing their Johns, limiting the emotional connection.
Well, now, there are, of course, celebrated works of art, all sorts of them, where the kiss is the subject. You know, the Gustav Klimt painting, the Rodin sculpture. And in the movies, in a love story, the kiss is, of course, the big moment. Now, we could talk about all our favourite movie kisses from, you know, Gone with the Wind and Casablanca to Spider-Man and the last Harry Potter film. Everyone will have their favourite, of course. But tell us about a film called The Kiss. Probably the first on-screen smooch.
That's a great one, because it was so scandalous at the time, and it would be absolutely nothing by today's standards. But in 1896, the Edison Company...
Now, this is 1896, of course, is very early.
And it was just a very proper-looking couple. They were dressed formally. The guy had this very, very large mustache, and it was this perfunctory kind of kiss, but it was a big scandal. And at the time, Herbert Stone, who was a reviewer, he said that the spectacle of prolonged pasturing on each other's lips was hard to bear, and such things should call for police intervention. So this was a big deal.
It was a 45-second movie, and the two actors talked for about 20 seconds, and then they kissed for another 20.
As Edison advertised this very short bit of film, saying they get ready to kiss, begin to kiss, and kiss and kiss and kiss, in a way that brings the house down every time.
That movie created such an uproar. You know, it changed the world.
It certainly introduced the kiss to the movies, paving the way for all those memorable moments to come. No love story without the kiss. Marcel Danese's favourite is Cinema Paradiso, the 1988 Italian film where a famous movie director is bequeathed a reel of all the kissing scenes that were censored from the movies of his youth.
You know, when I was a young, I was about 15, 16, I would make it a point. If I knew there was a kiss in a movie, I'd say, let me go see it. You know, the movie Cinema Paradiso, Nuovo Cinema Paradiso, brings this out very powerfully. If your audience is not aware of it, I really recommend seeing it. It's all about the kiss in movies and the kind of power that it had to transform people's lives.
Marcel, I think you're a real romantic.
I think you're right.
And Marcel Danese is the author of The History of the Kiss. Details for it are on the Bodysphere website. Marcel Danese is also Professor of Semiotics and Anthropology at the University of Toronto in Canada, joining us from Toronto. And Marcel, I'll blow you a simple thank you kiss across the airwaves.
Thank you so much, and I'll blow one back. Ciao.
And you also heard from the biologist Cheryl Kirschenbaum in Monterey Bay, California, the author of The Science of Kissing. There's details for that too on the Bodysphere website. And thanks to all those random people in the street who told their kissing stories. abc.net.au/rn is the website. Choose the Bodysphere from the list of programs there. You can post a comment. Go on, tell me about your first, best or worst kiss. You can also stream or download this and previous editions of The Bodysphere. I'm Amanda Smith. XXX.
Kiss me, and when you do, I know that you will miss me. Miss me if we ever said you. So kiss me, make me tell you I'm in love with you.